2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Welcome back to episode 2 of the Cape Cod Pod. I am your host, Jeff Ponce. This is the podcast that talks all things Cape Cod League throughout the summer. And of course, as always, I have my co-host alongside me live from beautiful Omaha. That would be Pete Flaherty, one of our college analysts. How is it going, Peter? I know you're out there in Omaha enjoying the College Baseball World Series, which has been a notable one, so to speak.
So again, this is my rookie year, but I can't remember a time where there were so many great games. There was this amount of unbelievable talent across all teams. Last night had, I think was, in my mind, it was the game of the year for sure. Some people are calling it the game of the century, but it's been an unbelievable experience so far, and still got two more games with a championship series of LSU and Florida, which is sure to be fun. So excited for the championship series, excited to get back on the ground on the Cape right after. Depending if it goes two or three games, I'm either flying out at 6:30 on Sunday and getting in at 1 a.m. on Monday, or I'm flying out at 5 a.m. on Tuesday and getting there for the Tuesday game. So quick turnaround to get right back to the Cape, which I'm excited about.
Yeah, absolutely. I was there again this week after an incredibly busy last week with end of school stuff, end of little league stuff, end of softball stuff for my different kids. So got three, so they keep me pretty busy with some of those things. So was a little different experience, but was able to get out to the yard this week. I'll be out there tonight in Wareham. Tanner Witt of Texas, who is recovering from Tommy John surgery. I believe he pitched a little bit during the regular season, but he's going tonight for Chatham. So really excited to get out there, see what Witt looks like pre-draft. This could be a guy that goes top three rounds. I don't think I'm saying anything out of turn there. And here's a little aside, Peter, one that you're going to be excited about. I don't know if you're already familiar with this or aware, but a former Cape League MVP, a standout for the Gatua Cattleers back in 2019, Nick Gonzalez was actually just promoted moments ago, like within the last 2 minutes, publicly at least, to the Pittsburgh Pirates major league roster. So Nick Gonzalez, officially a major leaguer. Congratulations.
No way. That's a lot. This is a live reaction. That's unbelievable.
Yeah. I thought I threw on Twitter to see if anything was new in my Cape Cod League feed. And because I have different lists for different things, and Nick getting promoted was right up top. And he was a guy that I think is a good example. Yeah.
What a note to start the pod on. That's exceptional. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think he's a good example, as I was saying, of the type of progression from a prospect standpoint and like a pedigree standpoint that the Cape Cod League can really bring to some of these players. It's a good reminder. Nick was a guy that, you know, hit a ton during his sophomore season at New Mexico State, comes to the Cape during 2019, was outside first round conversation. I think there was a lot of skepticism about his line, about his production because of the ballpark and how friendly it is for a hitting environment, particularly power there in New Mexico State. Comes to the Cape, hits from, you know, pole to pole, as I always say. Like, this guy was the best player on the Cape from the first game of the season all the way until the championship game, won every potential award, was probably one of the greatest Cape League seasons of all time. And I don't even think that's hyperbole. This guy played himself into the top 10, especially when you consider there were only 3 weeks of a season in 2020. Where he went in the draft was heavily based on that production and what he did for Gatua that summer. So every year we see some guys like this. Last year it was Matt Shaw. Year before it was Chase DeLauder and Spencer Jones and some of these guys. Every year there's somebody like that. We're going to talk about a couple of names today that I think could potentially sort of fit into that range. But let's talk a little bit about the Cape Cod League standings at the moment. And I actually have to pull those up because when I had pulled the notes together, I realized that the standings that I had are now a day old, and Kituit had actually lost last night. So they are in fact 8-4 at the moment, as opposed to 8-3, which they were yesterday. But when we look at the standings over in the West Division, it is, oh man, I pulled up the wrong standings here again. This is great podcasting stuff, Peter. Everyone's going to love it. But it's Kituit at – they still have yesterday's rankings listed. They have Kituit still listed at 8-3. They're, in fact, 8-4 now. And they have the Harwich Mariners listed at 7-3. And I would have to take a look at what the scores were yesterday to make sure that I was correct on this one. But Harwich didn't play last night. They got postponed. So I guess that actually is accurate. They're 7-3. They lead the East Division. Kituit's 8-4. They lead the West Division. Hyannis is on their heels. I think they're 6-5 right now, 7-5 right now, if I'm not mistaken. And Yarmouth Dennis is in second in the East Division. So it's, you know, it's early season stuff. You know, we've seen these teams go, like we saw Kituit go, what, 11-0 to open the season, 11-0-1. I can't remember what it was last year.
I think it was like 9-0-1.
9-0-1. Okay.
Regardless, it was an impressive mark. And yes. I just checked the standing. So I went in early. I went in to edit the, we're referring to our podcast plan. Kituit is in fact 8-3.
Okay. You actually fixed it. And I was.
No worries.
We were 8-2 before. So that's right there. 8-3. Still atop the West Division. And, you know, there's a lot. It's very close with like the remaining six teams. Orleans, Brewster, Chatham, Bourne, Wareham, Falmouth. And it wouldn't shock me if, you know, any of these teams emerge, particularly Bourne. You know, we know how good they are year in and year out. Kind of the same thing with Brewster. I wouldn't count those teams out. So it's a wide open race. It usually is that way until the middle of the summer, and then teams start to pull away. But yeah, so, you know, it's interesting because we're starting to see, and we're talking about this before we got on air, we're starting to see the more formal rosters take shape, where the USA guys are all leaving. Today might be the last day. It seems like the last 2 days, more heavily so. We've seen the sort of exodus. The pre-draft guys, a lot of them have headed out to the combine. Some of them won't return. We're starting to see guys matriculate in that maybe took a week or two off after their teams were eliminated from a tournament. And we're going to see some guys from College World Series teams over the next couple of weeks. So, you know, by 4th of July, we might have what the, you know, majority of the season, you know, permanent sort of rosters are going to look like. So kind of excited to see how that all shakes out. Should be pretty good. Don't know if you have anything else to add here before we talk about some of the week one performers that we highlighted on the hot sheet earlier this week.
Yeah, I think that this is the first point in the summer where, with given the USA and how that's formatted and the draft, this is the first point where guys will start to leave for whatever reason it is with the combine or Team USA. Last night, I know for any Team USA guy that showed up to the Cape, so we're talking like Jace LaViolette, Charlie Condon, Rodney Green, guys, Brody Brecht, guys who got invited to the collegiate national team last night was their last game before departing for training camp. And after that, it's really up to them if they want to come back or not. Mostly, I think if you're talking about pitchers, they're less likely to show. And I actually don't think that they'll come back, any of them. Position guys, it's a little bit more up in the air. If they make the team and play for the full three and a half weeks, whatever it is for USA, not sure if they'd come back. But if they don't make the final roster, you'll see them start to venture back. And then with the draft, guys will start to slowly trickle out. So it's a weird turning point. There'll be a little bit of a drop off in talent, but with the College World Series ending, you'll also get an influx of talent with these powerhouse guys now showing up. And in talking about the standings, you mentioned it, Kituit and Harwich leading their respective divisions. And then after that, Hyannis is right there within two games of Kituit. Last night, I mean, it was an unbelievable game. Kituit was up 6-0 going into the bottom of the ninth. I mean, look to be on their way to a relative, I wouldn't say easy win, because it was only 2-0 until the ninth. And then, you know, it felt like a Northeast high school game in terms of the weather. It was like 59 degrees, misting, just sounded miserable. Hyannis had a couple of blunders. Kituit took advantage. So they stretched it to 6-0. But then Hyannis, again, you could kind of, I don't want to say you could see a 6-run comeback coming, but as the inning was unfolding, it was like hit by pitch, walk, softly hit single. You could kind of see where the game was headed. and Hyannis took advantage. It was 6-3. Will Taylor dumped a single into right field. Throw gets away from Katuit's catcher and some heady base running. They tie the game and win it in the 10th. So unbelievable victory for the Harbor Hawks. A big one as they keep within two games of Katuit for first place. And then after that, it's kind of a cluster, as you mentioned, outside of first in either division. I'd say more so in the East than in the West. Between, other than Katuit being 4 points up on Hyannis, they're 7 up on Bourne and Wareham and 8 on Falmouth. But in the East, only 4 points separates first from fourth. So going to be a lot of shuffling around. As always, it's 10 excellent teams. Anyone could emerge in any which order in these divisions. So going to be a really fun month and a couple of weeks to see how it all plays out.
Yeah, and I was there for Hyannis Katuit, you know, on Wednesday night. They played sort of a home and home on Wednesday and Thursday. And, you know, the rivalry is still there. It's great how that sort of developed over the last 2 years as Hyannis has really stepped things up. And that's a really good lineup. Just from opening night to now, looking at the top of that lineup, there's some guys that can hit. You know, they added, you know, Billy Amick, of course, who's been really good thus far. Cam Smith, I thought, looked better than the first game that I had seen him, which is impressive. They have Mike Sirota for the entire summer, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, or we can even get into it now. Why not just get into it now and talk about that topic? Sirota playing for Hyannis the entire summer is huge news. Not only for Hyannis, but I just think for the Cape. Like, this is a guy that very reasonably could have been a starter for Team USA. I don't think I'm talking out of turn by saying that. Was a Dodgers pick back in 2021. I think they wish they offered him just a little bit more money to get him to sign, because he's going to get a few million dollars, I would imagine, next year. Play center field, plays right field. He uncorked a throw from right field the other night. I know you weren't there. That, you know, was pretty much the wall to third base in the air on a line, almost caught a guy going to third. The skills are all there. He can run. Every at bat is super competitive, works deep. He's a really, really tough out for anybody. I think that's a big one. And, you know, if I had to place a wager at this moment on a player potentially finishing, you know, as the MVP, I think I would place my wager on Sirota. Not to say there aren't other great candidates. We'll talk about a few today. But I think that's pretty huge news. And when I heard that after the game on Wednesday, I was kind of excited because I was like, hey, I'm going to get to see a lot more Mike Sirota this summer with a wood bat. And that's exciting stuff because I think he is legitimately a first rounder next year. I don't think, like I said, I'm speaking out of turn by saying that. What are your thoughts on Sirota being here all summer?
Without a doubt. And I think you hit the nail on the head. Not only is it good for the league to have a premier talent like that stick for the whole summer and not be like, oh, you know, it's great, we've got him now, but like, nah, he's leaving in a couple weeks for USA. It's like, nope, sure. He's here for the whole summer, which is outstanding for the whole league. And then obviously for Hyannis, as you said, he's a top half of the first round type talent in my mind. And he's as five tool player as I think you'll find in the league this year. He's twitchy as all get out, outstanding hands at the plate. You're not going to beat him with the fastball. He has a gap to gap approach, plus runner, great defender out in center field. He's going to be, man, in terms of raw talent, it's going to be tough to top Sirota in the league this year. And then talking about the MVP race, at least to very, very, very early in the game. So anyone, I guess, still technically is in contention to win it, depending on how they play. But I think that the only reason that Sirota might be lagging behind the guy that I mentioned now is just because Sirota came, I don't know, a week or so after he did. But Seaver King from Wingate, well, now Wake Forest for Harwich, is hitting .471 in 9 games. So off to an excellent start for King, but again, Sirota has the capability to put up monster numbers. He has the capability to dominate the league. We saw it last year in his stint with Hyannis. He more than held his own as a true freshman, which is incredibly admirable. So I have no doubt this summer is going to be more of the same for him, and he's going to improve his draft stock and prove himself as that few million dollar type talent, as you alluded to. And then one point I want to go back to with Hyannis and Cam Smith is he was someone that really impressed for Florida State in the fall, dipped off a little bit in the spring with some strikeout issues, some chasing issues, but he looks the part of a big leaguer on the field, takes a pro BP, as physical as they come, rocket arm at third. And I think for a freshman, you're in this constant development phase where like he is continuously getting his eyes hot and getting his approach refined. And you've seen it in the first, I don't know, 11 games that he's played. And the back of the baseball card isn't super sexy, 216, but you look at it, the strikeouts aren't enormously high. He's putting the ball in place, hitting the ball hard, and I think that's a really positive sign. So good start for Hyannis for sure. As you mentioned, with the new leaf turning over, it's really like you can't come up with a new name for Hyannis, but it's like a completely different franchise than it was in, I don't know, 2021. So it's been excellent to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've talked about that a few times, but yeah, year in, year out now, it seems like that's going to be a pretty good roster. They make smart decisions and acquisitions in season and now this year in terms of team building, which credit to Nick Johnson and that front office. They've done a great job. I wanted to talk a little bit about this player that you had mentioned earlier. I think he's kind of the buzz of the Cape right now. He's getting an absolute ton of smoke on the draft side. It was one of the first names that was in the transfer portal just because of Wingate's division. Their season ends a little bit earlier. So he was in the portal before Division One guys were. But that is Seaver King. He's a recent Wake Forest transfer. So Wake fans, if you're listening today and you're feeling a little down in the dumps about that loss, this is some good news. Seaver King looks like a potential first rounder. And he's going to be patrolling the middle infield for you guys next year. As you said, you know, as ripping it up early on, I think he was 10 for 15 over his last three games going into last night. Had a four-hit game on Monday against Kituit and followed that up with five hits on Tuesday against Brewster. I think he just had a hit on Wednesday, and then his game was rained out last night. So Seaver King looks like a guy that is must-see right now. Going to end up at Wake. And I think that this is a guy that could potentially lead the Cape with major first round buzz and a lot of hype and kind of be like the opposite of Maui Ahuna, who struggled last year when he was here, ended up getting a USA invite, goes to USA, struggled with Tennessee, kind of dropped out of that first round window and picture. I don't know if that's going to be the case with Seaver King. His skill set is really intriguing just in terms of the hit tool, the bat to ball skills, the approach, the power, you know, overall infield skills, that sort of thing. What are your thoughts on Seaver King? I don't think you've had an opportunity to see him yet, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you caught him once. What are your thoughts there? Because it looks like this could be, you know, one of the major pop-up guys this summer on the Cape.
Yeah, so I've only seen him on video, but as we talked about earlier, he's arguably been the most impressive player to this point on the Cape. He had that 9-for-10 stretch between June 19th and June 20th against Kituit and Brewster. And he's absolutely tearing it up, coming off a monster season at Wingate. Again, you mentioned the transfer to Wake Forest. He is super, super explosive at the plate. Fast twitch guy, plus runner. The glove needs a little work, I think, but this is where this summer comes in key, where it's just kind of like you stick him on the dirt and you let him work out the kinks there. He's super athletic and the actions are good, so it's all about just getting reps and continued refinement of the glove. And it looks to be solid so far, and I know that's where he's going to fit in with Wake in 2023. So he's tearing the cover off the ball, putting the ball in play at a consistent rate. Typically you see with Division II and some of even the lower-level guys, they go through this adjustment period of the Cape where facing this high-level pitching, they're a little overwhelmed early on, but King has dominated. I have no doubt that he'll continue to rake throughout the summer. I don't think that he'll hold the 471 average, but again, short list of guys on that top pro prospect MVP type watch, just especially when you look at who's going to be here for the whole summer and the numbers that they'll have at the end. I think that he definitely fits the mold for someone who takes home that award. And then in terms of the draft next year, you're spot on. It's top 50 overall buzz right now. With continued success on the Cape, it's only going to get higher. And then especially if he goes to Wake and mashes against ACC pitching, that's a, you're talking about a legitimate first round talent here.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. Let's, we talked about one player that I think probably is going to, he's in the bird dog seat at this point. He's on the top of the leaderboards for next week's hot sheet in week two. Didn't play enough games to qualify for week one. I think it was maybe like one or two games at that point. So that's a name to look out for at this point. He's kind of the clubhouse leader for the number one spot this week. But last week, we're going to go back and talk more Harbor Hawks. Hyannis has a player who's draft eligible, who was number one on the hot sheet. I think this hot sheet was probably a little bit more draft eligible heavy, just due to the nature of the Cape, the pre-draft timing prior to the combine and all that sort of stuff. So you had a lot of those names there. They're going to perform. They're a little bit older. But number one is Ben Williamson, someone who has not gone to the combine. And Williamson out of William & Mary from our good friend Mason McRae, who's now with the Cubs. Shout outs to Mason. But he was phenomenal over the first week of the season. 10 for 20, 500, 545, 700. Only had one run, but had four doubles, a couple of RBIs. That's when the rest of the lineup were not driving him in. Because 10 hits in the first week and four doubles, pretty good numbers. Williamson's a really interesting name. He's somebody that I had called out, I think, in our initial preview podcast as a guy that was a pretty interesting player, just from like the data and analytics standpoint. Pretty good bat to ball skills, pretty good swing decisions. There's power there, kind of checks all the boxes in the big three. He looks like he's going to be a senior sign in this draft for somebody and could turn out to be a pretty good player. What are your thoughts on Williamson? I got to see him a couple of times now. I don't know if you've seen him yet.
Yeah, again, haven't seen him yet because I Hyannis first came to Kituit, I think, a couple days after I left for the College World Series. But mid-major banger with Williamson, hit 390 at William & Mary, 11 doubles and 12 jacks. I think he walked 40 times compared to just 22 strikeouts. He tears the cover off the baseball. And in the field, he is super, super dynamic as well. Played a little bit of shortstop and third base for William & Mary. But on the Cape, he's been used in left. He's even been used in center field where he's been able to show off his athleticism. And I think on the dirt is where he fits best. But at third base, he's really comfortable moving laterally. He's really comfortable coming in on the baseball, can throw from all arm angles. I think has a plus arm in my book. And he's been excellent. You talk about guys coming to the Cape and improving their draft stock with how it's all formatted nowadays. And he's definitely someone who has done exactly that, hitting 400, four doubles and five RBIs, only five strikeouts in his 30 at-bats. And I think where in terms of senior signs, he screams like top seven, top eight round type pick, potentially even earlier. On a little bit of a discount. So Williamson's been excellent for him. And I love the fact, again, just how with Sirota, maybe it wasn't so much of a choice with USA, but at least with Williamson, I love the choice of not going to the combine. I think that there's no better combine and no better stage and way to prove yourself to teams than success on the Cape. And not a controlled setting where it's game-like scenarios. You're playing top-end talent, and I think that's the best quote-unquote combine out there. So credit to Williamson for not doing that. Credit to him for staying. I don't know how long he's going to stay before the draft. Some guys leave a little bit before. Some guys play through the draft, so I can't speak on when he's departing. But for however long he's here, there's no doubt he's going to continue to produce.
Yeah, absolutely. And agree with you there on everything. He made some great plays in left field, actually, in the first game. He made a diving catch where he laid out, and it was like, that guy is a third baseman, and he just made that play in a corner outfield. That's not too bad. Another guy from Hyannis I wanted to mention, third base outfielder as well, Billy Amick of Clemson, I think he's actually in the portal, though, so we shouldn't probably say that he's actually from Clemson because he's going to end up somewhere else. I don't think he's committed yet. I haven't heard any of those rumors. You may have heard something different. He's another guy that, you know, ranked three on our week one hot sheet. He hasn't slowed down. He's hitting 407, 500, 704 across his first 33 plate appearances. That's 11 hits and 27 at-bats. Got a couple of doubles, couple of home runs. Five strikeouts to four walks, four RBIs. Numbers are there. And Amick Banks, man, he's definitely somebody that I'm pretty interested in. He's a 2024 draft eligible guy, November birthday. What are your thoughts there with Amick? And where do you think he ends up? Because Clemson's a pretty big school to transfer out of, especially when you're playing. Where do you think he ends up? Is he a guy that can maybe end up at LSU?
Oh man, I think that with the season Billy Amick had, I think that he's going to have his pick of where he wants to play, and I have no doubt it's going to be a big time Power Five school. But in terms of the Cape, he's got such an interesting story because he played so sparingly as a true freshman at Clemson. I think it was something like he had under 20 at bats as a true freshman, which isn't totally uncommon for someone in their rookie campaign, but. This year he went absolutely silly. He hit 413, 17 doubles and 13 home runs. It's a really quiet operation at the plate, but he gets the ball up in the air consistently and with impact and drives the ball with authority. He's got power to all fields. And we've seen it so far in the Cape and on arguably the most difficult stage and the most difficult league and to hit in. And he's got two of Hyannis's three home runs to this point, a couple of doubles to his name. And then the approach is also good. There's not a ton of swing and miss there. And even his outs are hard hit. I mean, he's finding the barrel consistently. He's got great feel to hit, throwing the barrel on the baseball at a consistent rate. So again, I'm not sure where he's going to end up for 2024, but similar to Seaver King in terms of draft status and similar to Sirota, I think he is a certified day one guy at this point. And with continued performance on the Cape, that's only going to go up. So very looking like it's going to be a very, very interesting summer for Mr. Amick.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a name I think everyone should keep an eye on. Probably another potential option there as we talk about players that, you know, have some MVP caliber sort of stock and especially what they've done early. I wanted to ask you about another player that's since matriculated out. He is a draft eligible left-hander, Joe Whitman of Kent State. You saw him with Katuit. I know this guy following that start and some of the feedback that we started to get from scouts and cross checkers and decision makers with, you know, front offices was that this guy could be the first college lefty taken in this draft. This is a particular archetype that has not been very deep this year. There were some questions. I know Carlos had talked about this. He might have talked about it with you. Was, hey, this might be the first year in a long time there's no college lefty taken in the first round. Is Whitman a guy that could potentially see himself taken at the back end of the first round? How high can we see this guy go? What did you see from him? I did not have an opportunity to see Whitman. I know you did, though.
He was excellent. He made one start, but he certainly made his mark. Five shutout innings with nine strikeouts against an always talented Yarmouth Dennis team. And you make a great point. With talking about college lefties, you're kind of – it's a very, very small bucket of guys. It's like Hunter Owen, Sean – when talking about the top tier, it's Sean Sullivan, Hunter Owen, and now Joe Whitman. And I think that the ceiling for Whitman – I think that it's not outside the realm of possibility he gets selected in the first round. I don't know if someone's going to pull the trigger in the true first round, but I could absolutely see a comp type pick or early second round for sure. And I think that he's almost solidified himself as a day one guy at this point. Fastball was up to 95. It really took off when it was elevated, got a ton of swing and miss. The slider was absolutely a plus pitch in my look, a ton of sweep to it, got a lot of ugly swings and misses. And then the key for him has been the development of a changeup. He turned over a couple of good ones. What I saw, he got a couple of right-handed hitters to swing over it, generated soft contact. And then really, if not for anything else, it was just a different look for hitters to see that he had it and to change their eyes a little bit and keep them off balance. So I thought it was about as good of an outing as you could have asked for in terms of improving draft stock and also just in general. I think he allowed one hit in five innings, no walks, nine Ks, and it was against really good talented hitters. So big time start for Whitman, and I think that you can somewhat confidently say he'll go in day one at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to take a quick break right now. We'll be right back.
If you know me, you know how much I hate making plans. But something I hate even more is having nothing to do. So enter Game Time. Game Time has made it so easy to look up events happening tonight in my area, and I can buy tickets the easy way. So maybe I'll head to a Nationals game, or I'll go see a concert or a comedy show, whatever. I get access to the best seats and the best deals at the last minute, all while keeping my plans stress-free, just how I like them. I mean, it's the fastest growing ticketing app in the country for a reason. Buy tickets in a matter of seconds, two taps and you're set. Tickets are sent directly to your phone so you never have to dig through all of those unread emails. Snag the tickets without the stress with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code BASEBALLAMERICA for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code BASEBALLAMERICA for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed.
All right, and we are back with the remainder of the Cape Cod pod for this week. Wanted to talk to you a little bit about Jansen Kiesel, who Oklahoma State right-hander, saw him debut for Kattua the other day. He goes five innings, allows three hits, one earned run, two walks, struck out four, mixed a couple of different fastball shapes. He had a four-seam fastball that was more efficient. We're talking like 20 to 21 inches a ride. Terms of what was coming off of the Trackman there at Kattuit, 8 to 9 inches of horizontal break, was mixing a two-seam fastball as well that had a ton of arm side ride, sometimes 15 to 16 inches. That was a little bit softer, 89 and 93, kind of mixing both in each at bat. And slider 80, 83, changeup also had a cutter in the high 80s. It was a really good pitch mix. He navigated that really tough Hyannis lineup well. Got some swings and misses, got some bad contact. He's a really interesting arm. Know he's on a perm contract, should be here with Kattua for quite a bit. Kind of looks like he could be their ace, frankly. Really interesting arm and somebody that I'm excited to see a few more times throughout the summer. I don't know if you have any Jansen Kiesel thoughts at all.
So you saw him in person, and there's nothing more valuable than an in-person look, but and watching him at BYU his freshman year and then a little bit at Oklahoma State, it's an electric arm talent. Had a great year at BYU in his freshman year and then entered the portal where he'd end up in Stillwater for Coach Holiday. 7.8 ERA, which honestly in today's college game, it's crazy to say that's not all that uncommon, especially when your home stadium is Obrate Stadium, which is an absolute airport. The ball, for those who don't know, the ball absolutely zooms at Obrate. It's like hitting a golf ball, but I think the command has always been his bugaboo. You look at his stats this year at Oklahoma State, 19 walks in 18 innings in 18 and a third, which obviously that's going to bite anyone in the butt a little bit. And when you get a lot of traffic on the bases, they'll come around and score. And that's kind of led to an increase in ERA along with a couple of stinker outings, but 34 Ks in those same 18 and a third innings. So it's electric stuff. As you mentioned, fastball, it's two different shapes, 4 and a 2. The four seam, I know in your look, was up to 96. At Oklahoma State, it's been up to 98. And then the two seam is more of like a variance in shape, honestly. And it's kind of, he'll use it more later in outings to provide hitters with a different look, for lack of a better phrase. But the slider flash plus, I think it can be a true out pitch down the road. Really tough release height to pick up, especially when the ball explodes out of his hand like that. The key for someone like him, though, is just going to be command. And we saw it kind of what he can be, or you saw what he can be on today's Friday, on Wednesday, what he can be his best. And it's really effective. Held Hyannis, as you mentioned, a strong lineup to just three hits and five innings pitched, four Ks, and the command was there. So I think that's the best version of Jansen Kiesel, and I think one that he should be able to continue for the summer. And he's got a chance to improve upon his 2024 draft stock and prove himself as a potential weekend starter next year for Oklahoma State. That's going to need a couple guys after the departures of Jerron, or the presumed departures of Jerron Watts Brown to the draft, and then Ben Abram and Brian Hendry. So good start for Kiesel. I'm excited to get on the ground and watch him myself.
Shouldn't be too long now. So you'll probably see him next week, next Wednesday, you might see him go. So
exactly.
Not too bad. It was a good first outing though. You know, love to see a draft eligible arm with some upside and some stuff, which is cool. I wanted to ask you about this guy. You wrote about him last week in our Cape Cod hot sheet. That is Hunter Hines, first baseman outfielder from Mississippi State. He's on Yarmouth Dennis. He's a 2024 draft eligible player. Over the first week of the season, hit 400, 419, 700. He was 12 for 30 with 6 runs scored, 3 doubles, 2 home runs, 11 RBIs, a walk, 3 strikeouts and 3 stolen bases on 3 attempts. Talk to me a little about Hunter Hines. That was a really, really loud line in week.
Yeah, I mean, you look at this kid in person, and I had the with the YD game on opening day and Whitman going, I was in attendance, and you know, you see him and you're like, holy cow, this is a big boy. And at Mississippi State, had an excellent year at 297 with 22 jacks, 6'3", 210 left-handed hitter. Just, I mean, he pummels the baseball. And in talking about him at Yarmouth Dennis, and for the listeners out there, Yarmouth Dennis is the smallest park in the league in terms of distance. It plays pretty true as well, with right field being extremely, I think, I don't want to call it shallow, but right field is not deep at all. I mean, right-handed hitters will leave the yard backside there. And with Hunter Hines, you're talking about a 6'3 lefty, left-handed hitter with, for my money's worth, I think it's 60 grade raw power. So someone of that profile is, that screams someone who's going to have a really, really good summer, especially playing 22 games at Red Wilson Field. And we saw flashes of it in his first week plus. He hit 2 home runs, both at Red Wilson Field, but also has 4 doubles to his name. And I think his 11 RBIs lead the league right now. I'll double check, but it's second in the league. But again, really productive start for Hines. The 2 home runs are also tied for second in the league. And I think that when looking back at who are the biggest producers in the Cape for the summer, Hines has a chance to lead the league in both, I'd say, home runs and RBIs, just with the type of player he is. It's a gap-to-gap approach. Hits the ball with authority to each gap and can drive the ball out of the yard on a routine basis. So I think that he's someone that could put up gaudy numbers playing for Coach Pickler.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one thing you failed to mention about Red Wilson Field, was it 365 to dead center?
I think it's something like there. So they don't have the distances like some other parks do. So there aren't any distances listed, but you can go to Google Maps or whatever it is and measure it out yourself. It's very similar to Maryland's ballpark in terms of center field distance.
Yes. I saw a ball that was hit under 400, looked like it was hit 460 feet a few years ago by Dom Keegan there. I think I talked about that in episode 1. So yeah, it is a place where a hitter like Hines can be absolutely like lethal, you know. There's few places where you're going to run into something like that. Here, I wanted to sort of mention this one as well before we finish up. I got Tanner Witt going tonight for Chatham. As I mentioned, he's a draft eligible guy. What should I come to expect from Witt? I haven't seen him since 2021 in the Cape. He made a start actually post-USA. He's one of the rare post-USA pitchers that showed up. But I remember kind of a high ride four-seam fastball like in the low to mid-90s and a big hammer curveball. I think he had a changeup and maybe had a slider as well. But I distinctly remember that rainbow curveball. Talk to me about Witt so I can be prepared for tonight, what I'm going to see and wear him.
I'll try and give a good synopsis, but guy who had Tommy John surgery last year, which was a bummer because his sophomore season was off to a great start. Was fortunately able to come back at the tail end of this year in May, made a few appearances for the Longhorns, only threw 10 and two-thirds innings. Numbers weren't great, but again, it's a guy that's coming off of Tommy John and honestly probably still recovering from Tommy John, so I'll cut him an enormous amount of slack there. But 8 walks, 8 Ks, 11 hits, and 10 and two-thirds innings. ERA of almost 11, but you hit the nail on the head with Witt. It's at its best, it's a big-time fastball that runs and rides through the zone up to, gosh, I want to say it's only been up to 94 this year, but that velo is going to keep creeping back as he gets, honestly, just as he keeps throwing. So, I mean, depending on the weather, you could see 93 to 95 from Witt, and then that trademark hammer curveball. It's got a ton of depth, really sharp bite to it with some teeth. And, I think with, again, I think that this is where, while the draft being in July is a curse for a lot of, you know what, it's a curse for all 10 Cape teams for a various number of reasons, but I think it's a blessing for guys like Tanner Witt and any other prospects who may have missed a year due to injury or need to improve upon their stock. And I think that he is a golden opportunity here to make however many starts it is, 2 or 3 starts prior to the draft, and solidify and maybe even improve upon his stock where he could be a definite day one pick and then maybe even creep himself a little bit higher.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited to see him tonight. Hopefully I get a good performance. Maybe he goes a little bit deeper. I'll have that video up for everybody to take a look at what Witt looked like tomorrow morning. I doubt I'm going to be able to come home from that game, cut the video and get it up before 10 o'clock. After 10 o'clock, I don't like to post videos. So you'll get a morning video on this one. But Peter, we've been through everything. I just want to thank you for everything that you bring to the table here with the Cape Cod League Pod. Your looks, my looks, kind of mashing them together to give people some insight into what's going on in the peninsula during the early point of the summer. We'll be back again next week. This was the Cape Cod League Pod. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and tell a friend.